Hi there. Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. This is David Gibson, and our guest today is Roland McCready. Hi, Roland.
Good day. Good day, David.
Welcome, welcome. You know, our intention today is Roland's work is about heart coherence. So we're thinking to have the intention be that everybody on the radio show and ultimately everybody on the planet go into heart coherence.
Cool. That's a great intention.
Okay. So before we get started, I want to mention a few things that are happening at the school. We've got on Friday, August 15th, we've got a gong and Tibetan bowl concert with Danny Goldberg, and he puts Tibetan bowls on everybody, and it's a meetup as well, so there'll be a lot of people there, and it's only $20, so that's 7:30 on August 15th at the Institute here in San Francisco. And then on August 30th and 31st, we've got our Mount Shasta retreat. And there's still just about 7 spots left. We've already got 40 people signed up. So you can find information about that at soundhealingcenter.com. Or you can call me at 415-777-2486 or email me at david@soundhealingcenter.com. This is our 4th retreat at Mount Shasta, and it's quite amazing. It's at Stewart Hot Springs, which has some of the most healing water, and we're right on a river. It's just beautiful, and we'll be bringing in the energy of the mountain with sound healing for the whole weekend. We also have our certificate and associate degree program starting September 2nd in sound healing at the Institute. The certificate program is 3.5 months. The associate degree is 1.25 years. And we've got about 15 different instructors, so you get a wide perspective. And that's, again, starts September 2nd. We also have versions online as well. And we've also got this audio production course, which teaches how to make your music more powerful, how to use sounds and music that affect people more deeply at a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual level. We often work with Pro Tools, but if you use other programs, you could use those as well. My book is the number one selling book in the world in audio. And The Art of Mixing, and then The Art of Producing is the top-selling book in producing. That starts September 3rd, and we also have a version of that online. And again, we've still got the Sound Healing Store. We've got a full range of sound healing musical instruments. We've got about 100 crystal bowls here. You can also find them online. And we do a wide range of treatments at the Institute and online as well. And you can find that all at soundhealingcenter.com. Okay. Okay. So, welcome, welcome, Roland. So I wanted to start just by finding out about your background. How did you come to be who you are, and what is it you do? I know you work with HeartMath. You're the main, head researcher at HeartMath. And so, I wanted to, actually, let me give a little introduction here. It'd be good, huh? Let's see. Let me find it. Okay. So we've got, Roland is director of research of HeartMath Research Center at the Institute of HeartMath. He's also an adjunct professor at Clemson University and visiting professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. A psychologist, Dr. McCready's research interests include the influence, the physiology of optimal function with a function focus on the mechanisms by which emotions influence cognitive processes, behavior, and health, as well as a global interconnectivity between people and the Earth's energetic systems. Findings from this research have been applied to the development of tools and technology to optimize individual and organizational health, performance, and quality of life. He is a fellow of the American Institute of Stress, holds memberships with the International Neurocardiology Network, American Autonomic Society, Pavlonian Society, and Association for Applied Psychophysiology and Biofeedback, among others. Dr. McCready has acted as principal investigator in numerous laboratory research studies examining the effects of emotions on heart-brain interactions and on autonomic cardiovascular, hormonal, and immune system function. He's also served as a PI in a number of field studies to determine the outcomes of positive emotion-focused interventions and heart rhythm feedback in diverse organizational and educational settings, as well as in various clinical populations. Dr. McCready and his research team regularly participate in collaborative studies with other U.S. and international scientific and medical educational institutions, and they have worked in partnership with research groups at Stanford University, Wake Forest University, U.S. Navy and Air Force, Miami Heart Research Institute, and Claremont Graduate University, among others. His research has been published in journals that include the American Journal of Cardiology, Journal of the American College of Cardiology, Stress Medicine, Biological Psychology, and Integrative Physiological and Behavioral Science. Wow. You're not bored, are you?
I managed to keep pretty busy.
Cool. Wow. So the most interesting, go ahead and tell us about how you came to do what you do and about your work, your present work.
Okay, I'll see if I can make a somewhat long story short. My original work was and training was in communications engineering. I used to work for Motorola. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. So I have a pretty deep background in electromagnetics and, radiational physics, that kind of thing, in terms of radio waves and communication systems. Then I started my own company, skipping a few things here, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. In electrostatics, and I got transitioned into, I should add here, I was always interested in, the deeper understanding of magnetic fields and electric fields and what they really are. Because in the mainstream world, we know a lot about how to describe them and their behavior and how to manipulate them. But at a real deep fundamental level, we really don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. They're just theories. Mm-hmm. And how they really operate. But anyway, so I always had an interest in that, which kind of got me into some of the more metaphysical, I guess you could say, writings and things in that field, but never really got sucked into too deep into the more new age concepts and things. But I did get into meditation and was a meditator and practiced mindfulness and things and many meditations for many, many years, 15 years or so. And which was helpful. I don't know that I'm pretty good at it, but anyway, I met, Doc Childrey at a certain point in that career. I had a very successful business. We went from a startup in a garage to a $15 million a year company within 3 years, and then that continued to grow from there. Mm-hmm. And I was at a point in my life where I wanted to get more back into the humanities kind of thing and stuff. And that's when I met Doc Childrey, the founder of HeartMath. This is pre-HeartMath, of course. Mm-hmm. And through some mutual friends, and we just hit it off and resonated, and through that period is when I had my own heart opening and awakening. So anyway, that led me to sell that company and help found HeartMath with Doc and some other people.
Mm-hmm. What happened? Tell us what happened with your, then we'll continue. Tell us what happened with your heart opening.
I made more personal progress on multiple levels in 3 months than I had in 15 years of meditation. So that got my attention.
With the technology?
No, nothing. This is nothing about, inner technology, I guess.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm leaving a lot out here, but, that's the kind of gist. So then I got into I'm not a psychologist, by the way, psychophysiologist.
Okay.
That's okay. So then I went and got a PhD in psychophysiology and collected to myself a lot of mentors. to really cut through, like Carl Prebrum, and who's considered by many the father of modern cognitive neuroscience, and Don Singer, who coined the term heart rate variability, and a bunch of people like that. Franz Hallberg, he's the fellow who coined the term circadian rhythm. Put together our scientific advisory boards, and pretty knowledgeable people, and started the research center here at HeartMath. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So a lot of your work is really about looking at would you call it the psychophysiology of the emotion of being you might have to help me here. The emotion of being in the state of love, or backtrack. So there would be different, as far as the different emotions, do you separate out love versus other high emotions such as compassion and just what people think of as bliss and such?
Yeah, I do. My own personal way of thinking, I mean, love's a big term, and that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. For some, love is the organizing intelligence of the universe that created everything. And then there's all kinds of love, the love we have, romantic love we have for children, siblings. I mean, and they're all different kind of qualities and textures. But my own kind of perspective is, if we think of the, this is a really answer this how I really see it. It's a little bit complicated, but love basically is an octave, if you will, that would embrace compassion and kindness and appreciation and gratitude and all of the other emotions. If we're talking at the higher, you know, frequency level, but when it gets down to human experience, their love is like I just said. There's many different kinds. And appreciation is different than love, and compassion is different, and so on, in terms of our experience and the qualities of those emotions.
Cool. You know, it's interesting you talk about octave and a higher frequency. I teach a whole class on the different emotions and how to release stuck emotions and how to go to so-called higher emotions. But I'm now starting to think of them not as higher frequency, although that's the term that everybody uses, because if you think of fear, it's really a distorted frequency. It's really it's like, it's really not it's not the coherence. So the coherence. The way I look at it is really been kind of, entrained by by your work there, because I follow it really closely. It's really about consistency. It's consistency. Which is really the heart coherence, because for the listeners, my understanding of heart coherence is simply a consistent S curve of smoothly getting faster rate and then smoothly getting to a slower rate. And it's really the consistency. And so the higher emotions seem to be all about not higher frequency, because anxiety is actually a very high frequency.
Well, that depends on the level we're talking about, I think, David, from my perspective. So maybe this will be helpful, and it's kind of related to your question about our research, because it's focused on different things and it evolved over many years. So back in the very early 90s, we started, in fact, our first projects in our lab, when we set it up, was like a lot of labs do, beginning is looking at the physiological correlates of different emotions. Mm-hmm. Now we took a different track, then in the fact that we looked at positive emotions as well as negative emotions. Now that may not sound like a big deal these days, but at that time, nobody was doing that. In fact, there were a handful, what you could count on one hand, literally, of publications that had to do with positive emotions and their effects on physiology at that time. Uh-huh. So this is, a good 15 years before positive psychology movement got started and all of this. And we, of course, through our own intuitions and understanding of what was going on, we put a little more focus on the activity of the heart. But we were looking at all the standard psychophysiological measures, you know, brain waves, EEGs, and skin conductance. So we're a pretty well-equipped lab.
Uh-huh.
And what we found then was that and this took some doing, but that emotions were most reflected in the rhythms of the heart.
Uh-huh.
And which was surprising. They weren't EEGs and brain waves and things.
Mm.
And then that led us into heart rate variability from observing that. And this is before it was even called heart rate variability. We've been at this a while. Let me see if I can make this sense. So basically what you can think of is in a healthy person, our heart rate changes with every heartbeat. So it's the interval, the time interval between beats are always changing. Now, fast forward a few years from that, those initial observations, we now know that the heart beats out messages very much like Morse code. There's information encoded in those interbeat intervals, very much like music in a way that the information is between the intervals, right?
Now, how is it encoded? Because
literally at this level, it's literally the time between intervals.
Okay. So not in the actual frequency of the heart, but just the time between intervals.
Yeah. So, and that's actually, by the way, a universal strategy that physiology uses to encode information.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the brain, for example, all the information is in the intervals between neural spikes. It has nothing to do with the amplitudes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The inner spike intervals, the same thing in the hormonal system and so on. There's additional information in the time between pulses. But that's a little bit off track there.
Mm-hmm.
So what we observed back, this is going back to the 90s, early 90s again, was that positive emotions, when we're really feeling, not thinking about or visualizing, that doesn't do anything to change physiology, or very little, I should say. But when we actually experience an emotion, that causes large changes in physiology, our blood pressure, especially the rhythms of the various rhythms, but especially the heart. And that positive emotion, compassion, appreciation, gratitude, so on, you know, kindness,
mm-hmm.
Were a very distinctive pattern being reflected in the heart rhythms. And that's that sine wave rhythm that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then later a colleague has taken our work a step farther and is now showing, using kind of complicated neural network type models for pattern recognition, that with about 75% accuracy is where he's at now, and he can detect discrete emotions from only looking in heart rhythm patterns. In other words, you can distinguish anxiety from frustration and, you know,
so I'm sorry. So to understand, you're saying that just by doing a different mapping based on these heart rhythms, he's getting more detailed information?
Yeah, I'm saying he's able to do discrete emotional state detection just from looking at heart rhythms.
Wow.
I mean, anxiety looks different than frustration, and appreciation looks different than, say, compassion, and so on.
So but there's still, if you were to look at them, there's still general S curves. But there's little variations within that S-curve that show the different emotions?
Yeah, you can think it. You call it S-curves. I'll call it a sine wave.
Okay, cool.
But it's especially more on the, I think for the listeners in general, we need to understand that emotions that we call them, draining emotions, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Irritation, impatience, frustration, anxiety, so on, lead to what is, if you look at the rhythmic patterns of the heart, is a very chaotic looking pattern. We call that incoherence.
Mm-hmm.
That's reflecting a lot of a lack of synchronization in the activity of our nervous system and brain structures and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That's associated with those. So that's one class of rhythms, incoherent.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all your, you know, the types of emotions that end up draining our energy at the end of the day.
In my book, I actually show a full range of different incoherent waveforms, because, you know, I was a physics major at UC Berkeley to start, so I studied physics of sound and look at that those the different waveforms in that respect. It's cool.
Discordant music, I guess.
Uh-huh. Right. It seems like there's three different types. There's that I've come across. One they're odd harmonics, which are distortion. One is just a infusion of noise, random noise, which is creates it's like static. And then there's also an oscillation between two frequencies, which is like worry just scattered brainness.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't want to get too, I want to kind of tell the general story here.
Okay, cool. That's okay. Soundtrack. That's cool.
So basically those early observations that emotions are reflected basically in the pattern of the rhythms more so than how much variability we have. Mm-hmm. It's also an important issue, but that's a little bit off topic right now. So that, at that time, going back a lot of years here still, of course, but the question then became, well, is this a convenient artifact? The fact that our emotions are reflected, that was a big deal, that observation. That Carl Priebram, Dr. Priebram, it's what drew him to our work, because it really confirmed a lot of his theories. And his advice at that time, it was really good advice, he said, because we were looking at what to do next, and he said, well, what you've done already is what many research groups have spent their entire career trying to do, looking at other measures, brain waves and so on, discrete emotional state detection. And I said, stick with this. You're on to something here. And then so the next question became, well, is there a physiological reason for that? And then that led to a whole new era of our research, which is looking at the what's technically called afferent or ascending neural pathways from the heart to the brain. As it turns out, what I'm about to say has actually been known since the late 1800s and just forgotten and ignored, is that the heart actually sends more information to the brain by far than what the brain sends to the heart. And there's a whole research body in psychophysiology that goes back quite a ways to the 1970s, showing how these rhythmic patterns from the heart affect cognitive function and our emotional experience and so on. Mm-hmm. So then that led us into that area of really digging deep into that and then adding to that body of research about how these rhythms of the heart affect our brain. So when we're in those incoherent heart rhythms, basically the effects that has on the neurons in the brain, going into the anatomy here, but is it basically scrambles brain function. That it really gives an explanation now at a physiological level of, let's say, why when we get angry at somebody, you know, they do or say something that kind of gets us a little upset, that we can find ourselves saying or doing something that we regret later. Mm-hmm. Not that you've ever had that experience.
That's right.
Where we blurt something out, you know, and then I'll go, oh my God, where was my brain? I can't believe I just said that. I didn't really even mean it, you know, mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Or just the brain fog when you get upset.
Yeah,
you can't really.
All those things. Well, that's driven to a much greater degree than most people realize by the activity of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we spent a lot of time really mapping that out and understanding that. And then that's when I got involved in, made some really good, another fellow who's on our advisory board, Dr. John Andrew Armour, who's the top neurocardiologist in the world. So he's mapped out that we now have the understanding of what's technically called the intrinsic cardiac nervous system, but more popularly known as or nicknamed the heart brain. Mm-hmm. Literally, the heart has an intrinsic nervous system that has all the functions of a little brain, that long, short-term memory, many, many functions like that. So basically those years we're really mapping out the anatomy and really understanding the physiology of emotion and how what the heart is doing is largely informing the amygdala and other brain centers to what the heart and body is feeling, which is it's then interpreting. So that kind of created, I'm rounding a lot of this off, but hopefully it makes sense to people.
Oh, sure.
So that kind of closed another loop. And then the next sort of little mini era was in, okay, that's neat. And that allowed us understanding that, well, and I should add that a number of studies have now shown that when we're in that coherent rhythmic heart rhythm state, that's really the physiological signature of optimal function. That's when our brain operates the best. So that's the state we want to be in before we make any important decision.
Mm-hmm.
But enables us to better self-regulate ourselves. So we don't charge something on our credit card when we're trying to, cut back on expenses or eat the second piece or the second cookie or something for on a diet and so on and so on. Our self-regulatory capacity is greatly enabled, when we're in that coherent state. Lowered blood pressure, increased hormonal balance, many, many physiological studies were done. Then the next step was, looking at what we now call the electrophysiology of intuition. So we got pretty deep into intuition studies. I need to say that we've identified three types of intuition. And most of the academic writings and most of the books that are out there, there's 40-some books on intuition, are all focused on what's called implicit knowledge or implicit learning, which is all brain-based. It's where we have learned things and forgot we learned them or didn't know we learned them and are making unconscious pattern and associations and so on. And that's also related to what's called insight, which everybody's experienced, right? We have a new challenge or problem. Yeah, we don't have a solution for it, so we kind of forget about it, and then a day or two later, when we're either in the shower, not thinking about it, or driving our car, or something like that, you know, drifting off, is when the insight pops in, that either the solution or a way to find the solution to that problem pops up, right, the insight. Mm-hmm. Then the another type is we call energetic sensitivity, and that's our nervous system's ability to respond to literally frequencies in the environment, magnetic fields and so on. So this is the kind of things we call intuition, when maybe feel like somebody's staring at you. You turn around and sure enough they are, right? Mm-hmm. Or these kinds of things.
And that's not an electromagnetic field. That's actually...
Well, it can be. It actually can be. Another example is some people really are sensitive to earthquakes coming, mm-hmm. the magnetic field. That would be a more classic example. Because mm-hmm. cool. We know we can measure changes now in the Earth's magnetic fields prior to earthquakes and so on. But then the third type, and the one that's the most relevant for this discussion, we call non-local intuition. Mm-hmm. So this is the mother who knows their child is in distress and they're on the other side of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or an example a lot of people have anyway. Is you'd be driving your car and a road you've gone down hundreds of times, thousands of times before even. But for some reason, you don't really even know why, you might not have even been conscious of it. You slow down before going over a hill or around a curve or something. And sure enough, there's a child running out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or an accident that occurred there that if you hadn't slowed down, you might have been, you know, in trouble. Almost everybody's had, when you think about it, those kinds of experiences. So you cannot explain those through the implicit processes and so on. But anyway, we've developed very rigorous lab protocols for measuring this non-local intuition.
All three?
We've done all three, but, mm-hmm. but non-local is the more interesting one.
It's probably the trickiest one to measure, too, huh?
It actually is. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot on the energetic sensitivity as well. That's a whole other category I'll get to in a second.
Mm-hmm.
The more intensive of those studies, we measured brain waves and heartbeats and skin conductance, and mm-hmm. it was a pretty large study. It took a lot of time, a lot of effort to do it. But at the end of the day, we had some pretty surprising results for us, and that was that these, let me back up a little bit. There's been many studies done like this now. In fact, even meta-analysis of them that are confirming the results, is that prior to an unknowable future event, you know, that are controlled by random generators, number generators, and so on, mm-hmm. Pretty hardcore ones like they use in Las Vegas, the body would respond prior to the event in a way that was predictive of the future event. But what we were able to then show was that the first organ to respond in that what we call pre-stimulus period is actually the heart. And then the heart sends a measurably different neurological signal through all those ascending nerves to the brain. That's a measurably different signal that then informs the brain. And then you have a brain response all before the future event. And then you have a body response, which is the gut. You know, the gut feeling.
What's the earliest you've gotten that information through the heart?
Well, we now know is really controlled by the experimental protocol, and 20 seconds is the earliest that we've shown.
Wow.
The original studies were like six, seven seconds, but it was, it's the way the protocol is designed, how much time you allow for the response to occur.
Mm-hmm.
But really the main story here is that it's heart first. So that, the way I got that published back then was to say that it appears that the heart and brain have access to a field of information not bound by time and space.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly acceptable language for scientific journals. Because at that time, non-locality and entanglement had all been proven, you know, and verified. But at that time, it was only supposed to happen at subatomic scales, you know, below the level of an atom. And here we were showing that it was occurring at macroscopic scale, parts, you know, and brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since that time, it's been, you know, quantum physics has demonstrated these same principles at macroscopic scales as well, you know, even whole groups of atoms and so on. So basically, what I meant by a field of information not bound by time and space is what's been called, you know, for millennia, right, the spiritual heart, right, or higher self or soul or spirit, whatever you want to call it. In other words, another dimension of information that we have access to. So this is the core, when you, and I'm sure you're aware of this, David, of all the great religions on the planet, is that the heart is the source of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Higher intelligence, intuition, is often talked about relative to the heart. That's true of Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, you know, Judaism. I mean, all of them have that as a core tenet. So this is some of the, from my perspective, some of the best studies that have been done that really are verifying that they've been right all along about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that brings us into emotion, back to emotion. And what we, well, I would say that we can say that love, compassion, and self actually are a higher frequency emotion when we're talking about the energetic system. But it's a different story when we're talking at the level of our body and physiology. Does that make sense?
As an energetic system, how is it a higher frequency? What is it you're measuring at an energetic system?
Measuring there yet.
I'm sorry?
We can't measure at that level yet.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a higher frequency. It's just the terminology you're using.
Yeah, I actually think from my own experience, it actually is a higher frequency.
Well, if it's a higher frequency, what is higher?
Well, at the energetic level, it would be the vibratory rate.
But vibratory rate of what?
Well, that's what I'm...
Consciousness?
Yeah, so intuition, basically, is the flow of information from on my world,
mm-hmm.
of our higher self, if we'll use that, if you allow me to use that term, our spirit, soul, large self, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
down through the energetic heart into the physical heart, mind, brain system. So it's what we talk about heart math tools that get us more coherent being all about is being able to align with that part of our deeper self, you know, which is what raises consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So as consciousness is raised, what's happening, what our data would suggest, is where our consciousness is vibrating at a higher literal frequency. In other words, think of sample rate. It's a higher sample rate.
So yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, but I don't, that's, I mean, consciousness at a higher frequency.
Well, think of awareness. Think of it this way. When I talked about when we get a little bit upset.
Because, you know, when you look at, the brainwave perspective, consciousness, it actually goes higher and lower at the same time. And there's a lot of people in the field that are talking about higher consciousness is not actually higher frequency. Multiple people, including the research we've done, is that it's all frequencies at the same time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think you might have missed the point I made about the difference between physiological level measures.
Yeah.
Heart coherence is a very low frequency. It's a 10-second rhythm.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I would agree with you that the lower brainwave frequencies are where we have more access to the type of consciousness I'm trying to
talk. I'm speaking of consciousness, though.
So am I. But I'm... Anyway, we can skip that topic then.
That's really interesting because, you know, can I share a few observations that I've come across in my book and that you might find interesting and see what you think about them? Because this might, just to add a different perspective to this. You know, as far as vibration, I've identified, five levels of vibration that everything seems to work at. One is pure frequencies, which is technically the exact same as rhythm. because when you have a frequency and you slow it down, it becomes a rhythm. So every rhythm is actually a note. So when you speak of the different heart rhythms, you're actually talking about a specific note, which would be an average at a resting rate. And then there's the second level, which is timbre, and that's a harmonic structure, which is a combination of frequencies. And then the third level is a combination of frequencies or timbres, which are musical intervals. And then there's the actual flow, which is music, which adds in the time component, which is a combination of frequencies, timbres, and musical intervals over time. And then there's energy. So at those five different levels, I often look at it. So when you're talking about the heart rate, I'm thinking, okay, we're talking totally the frequency, which is the note or the actual rhythm, the speed of the rhythm, but also the music of it, which would actually be the flow of the frequencies, of the rhythms up and down. And that flow is where you're getting the information, for all the different, emotions and such. So you're really looking like at the music, the change in the music. But then there's the energy level, and the energy level, I'm just kind of, just postulating that the energy level is like a whole hologram of all of that. Frequency, timbres, musical intervals, and music at the quantum level. When I look at that, I start to think, okay, well, how do different frequencies affect this rhythm of the heart besides the rhythm itself? How do different timbres affect the heart? Which timbres are simply different instrument sounds, or different vowel sounds, or different syllables from ancient times as well.
Okay, I'm not quite sure I understand. You're going to a very different level than I was trying to go to, so I'm trying to understand now what.
It's just putting from another perspective and seeing how different perspective. So,
yeah, if you look at the heart rhythm in your model there, that's all of that is occurring, because you have to remember that the heartbeat itself is a lot of frequencies just in the heartbeat that are literally radiating external to the body, because with every heartbeat we generate a magnetic field that can be measured 3 feet away from the body.
Uh-huh.
Which is a very complex field to begin with, and then we're looking at the intervals between beats, which is what creates the rhythm, and that's a very complex rhythm that has four primary physiological rhythms that all trace back to physiological things. So it's a very complex way. Even the HRV waveform, which is derived from many heartbeats, across time, is a very complex waveform. And that's where what I'm saying, at that level, that emotions are reflected. It's in the different patterns of the rhythm.
Uh-huh. Sure. But it's all in the rhythm. Do you look at the actual frequency of the sound of the heart when it makes a sound?
Well, sure, there's sounds at the level of sounds we can hear. That's a complex thing, too.
Uh-huh.
I haven't even addressed yet. And all of that's going on.
Do you get good information from that as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So those are very complex spectra. It's not a single frequency.
Right, that's a timbre.
Yeah, but it's and that's across time. It is, you could think of it as music.
If it's across time, then it is music, yeah. But if you look at... Yeah, because even timbres do have a time component in them as well.
Yeah, because remember, to even get to heart rate variability, it's got to be across time, because we're measuring the intervals between heartbeats. My terminology is like Morse code, and there's meaning in those intervals.
I understand that. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Now let me explain another concept and see if this might make you think of things in a different way, or just open up some possibilities, or just see if you think I'm crazy. Okay. Now, the interesting thing, and this gets a little esoteric, because it's interesting because, the problem with a lot of science is you can't really measure things as such as soul and spirit.
Yeah, not yet, anyway.
Right, not yet. I mean, they're starting to measure chakras, right? But I don't know. I know of a couple of units that measure the energy of the chakra, the amount of energy, but not the actual frequency of the chakras.
Right, like the GBD. That's exactly right.
Uh-huh, right, right. And there's also the REBA, which measures it as well, REBA. Well, let me put it this way. You know, what we do is we look for a person's overall resonant frequency. And that frequency translates into a rhythm, I assume, of the heart. That there's a basic note. And here's the concept. Every single song has a home note. It's called the key of the song. And it's impossible, practically impossible for a song to not have a home note if there's any coherence in the song. The only way a song would not have a key is if it's chaos or random, or jazz sometimes, you know, hovers between two keys. But generally, if all the frequencies in a song are in harmony, which they normally are, you're always going to have a home note. And the definition of that home note is where you're at peace. So I assume, since the body is a conglomeration or symphony of frequencies, every cell, every organ, every rhythm is a note as well, that you have to have a home note where you're at peace. And that home note, I assume, would be when you're in coherence, and that actual rhythm of your heart would be your home note. So, and I assume that every frequency in the body is actually in relation to that home note, just like every note in a song is in relation to the key of the song.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm really interested in is looking at the actual note, which would be the rhythm, because every rhythm is, so it would be an average of the rhythm of the heart, and or looking at the range of the rhythms and seeing what notes the heart is actually playing, and then looking at the other rhythms in the body in relation to that, because I assume that every rhythm in the body is going to be in harmony with the rhythms of the heart if you're healthy or not stressed.
Well, that would be true.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mei Wan Ho states it, I think, pretty well, and she's the first, she's a biologist, I don't know if you know her work or not, but she actually defines living systems as quantum coherence, is the quality of a living system. And she points out that complex living systems, like humans, right, that there's expands, I think it's a little over two-thirds of the known 72 octaves, like you're talking about, from molecular level to cells to organs to heart rhythms and brain waves and so on. And that at one level, it can look like a certain frequency or system is doing something on its own. And but when you look at the higher levels, it's all perfectly coordinated.
Uh-huh.
Even though one system looks like at the micro level, it's completely independent. It never is and can't be in a living system, which is kind of what you're talking about. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a coherent confederation, right? That allows for a living system to merge. It'd be a free for all, life could exist, right?
Yeah. Right.
So anyway, she's to actually demonstrate quantum coherence in living systems from a biological level. Which is kind of related to what I think you're trying to talk about.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, as far as what are the rhythms of the earth that are affecting us?
Well, there are several.
Uh-huh.
Look at field line resonances, as they're called. So, for the listeners to understand what I mean by that, you've got the geomagnetic field. It's what our compasses tune into.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes out into space many, many thousands of miles. And it's a static field, right? It's like a permanent magnet, even though it's not really, but it acts like that. So the magnitude doesn't change. but the field lines called flux lines, you can think of like guitar strings. And just like a guitar, when you pluck a string, they vibrate. And depending upon the tension, they change their bass frequency or note, and they can go into, harmonics and things like that. The field lines of the earth work the same way. And what's plucking the strings of the earth, the field lines, are the solar wind. And as it turns out, those have the frequencies of those vibrations overlap human and animal cardiovascular function, the same rhythms of the heart that we've been talking about.
Right.
Then there's a second, I call energetic system or magnetic field, that is created due to the ionosphere. And this also gets complex, and there's multiple ones, but the ones that are the most relevant for this discussion and most people know about are called Schumann resonances.
Uh-huh.
And that's just after a guy named Otto Schumann, a German mathematician who first predicted their existence. And it has to do with the physical geometry of the cavity between the Earth and the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And those, the bottom frequency of that is 7.8 hertz, which is low alpha. And there's 8 primary Schumann resonances. They all overlap human brainwave frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
The Schumanns are at a much lower magnitude, magnetically speaking, than the field line resonances. And what I've basically just explained is that the Earth is singing away, if you will, in a very complex way that overlap human hearts and brains.
So would you say the field line resonances are way more prominent in affecting our brainwaves than the Schumann resonances?
No.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't say they're higher magnitude magnetically. They're more prominent in affecting cardiovascular system.
Okay.
That's the rhythms that they have with.
Okay.
Where Schumann resonances would be more prominent or effective in pulling our brainwaves around. And they do. That's been demonstrated scientifically in several studies.
Cool.
So just like in basic physics, right? When we have two tuning ports, as you would well know, David, when you bang one and the other, or guitar strings, whatever, the other will start to vibrate in unison with it. There's a way of demonstrating the phenomenon of resonance.
Mm-hmm.
But magnetic fields work exactly the same way. In the case of tuning ports and guitar strings, it's air molecules that transmit the information, that carry that energy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But magnetic fields work exactly the same way. It's like cell phones. All those frequencies are in the air, and we have to create a resonant loop with the one we want to tune into to pull out of the air and get the information. So the moral of that story is that when you have resonant systems, you can transfer for energy and more importantly, information between them. And humans just happen to be resonant with the Earth's field. So our hypothesis is energy and information can transfer back and forth. It's not really a hypothesis. There's a lot of support for that.
Mm-hmm. And it shows how we're affected by solar flares dramatically, emotionally, huh?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's more interesting. We've got some new data that we haven't published yet that we're probably going to try and go for a Nature publication that's rather profound, actually. But some of the other studies have shown that pretty strong correlations between, it's pretty easy to understand when there's fields or disturbs how that would affect us, and it does. We're more mentally confused, quicker to get upset and angry and so on, don't sleep as well, these kinds of things. And for a lot of people you can wake up in the morning and you just don't feel good, you feel out of sorts, but it's not because of anything that happened, you didn't have an argument with anybody or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel out of sorts. It really can be because of disturbed fields, earth scale fields. That's pretty well known now and,
cool.
and well established.
We've only got about 5 minutes left. Can you tell us about the Global Coherence Project?
What we're talking about now is part of that project.
Uh-huh.
So the Global Coherence Initiative is a project to look at the interconnectivity between humanity and the Earth's fields. So what the studies right now, to do this, to do science, we have to measure, of course. So we're putting ultra-sensitive magnetometers that are designed to measure the resonant frequency in at the Earth scale, like I've been talking about, at strategic locations around the planet. So we've got them now, one in Saudi Arabia, for example, one in Lithuania. I hear one at our facility in California, New Zealand, and so on. And so we're able to really measure the Earth's frequencies globally, and they are different in different regions, by the way. Mm-hmm. And the studies we've been doing the last couple of years are then measuring people, especially their heart rate variability, which reflects nervous system activity, and seeing correlations across all that. Our ultimate goal is to show that it works both ways, the central hypothesis. So one of the DCI's hypotheses is that the Earth's magnetic field acts as a literal carrier wave of biologically relevant information. Now it ties back into where I was trying to go a little while ago with non-local intuition before we shifted gears. Mm-hmm. But, which, because I don't believe in magic, there's always a mechanism for how mom knows that, you know, their child was in distress on the other side of the planet. But that really could be the Earth's magnetic field as the carrier of that. And there's some pretty neat experimental evidence that in the last few years is starting to really support that perspective. But anyway, that's a whole other story and probably take more than the few minutes we have left to get into.
Mm. Do you see there's any new feedback equipment that might be coming down the line that you're interested in that would show even more detail?
Well, not that I'm when it, detail of what level, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Well, whatever you might be interested in.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly interested in any new things that really get us into being able to measure more at what we can call generically the biofield level or that the energetic level. Because
mm-hmm.
That obviously is a real thing. But right now, we can only measure the effects of it, mm-hmm. Not it directly. But my own intuition is that we're getting much closer to being able to crack into that world at another level.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah. So once again, we hold that intention for heart coherence across the planet, especially for all of our listeners. So tune in to that. Go ahead.
I just say the easiest way for listeners to really get into that more coherent state is to, we call it heart-focused breathing. Just put your focus in the center of your chest and breathe a little slower and deeper. But as you're doing that, activate and feel appreciation for someone or gratitude, mm-hmm. and or for yourself, and just radiate that into the field. I like to encourage people to really think about throughout the day, what are they feeding the field?
Are we
feeding that love and kindness and appreciation, or frustration and impatience and intolerance?
In over the last 10 years of doing different ways of getting people into opening their heart, one of the simplest I've found is to just say, bring love into your heart now.
Mm-hmm.
Feel love in your heart now. And hold that frequency as long as you can through the evening, through the rest of the weekend, through the weeks ahead, through the months ahead. Imagine holding that frequency in your heart for years ahead, or lifetimes. Thanks so much. Take care.
All right, you got the rest of your day.
You too.